From the shadowy depths of the city, where justice and mystery intertwine, emerges a broadcast as daring and vigilant as the masked Avenger himself. You are tuned in to the Green Hornet Case Files, unveiling the legacy and cultural significance of one of the greatest crime fighters of all time. Now, let the adventure begin. Here are your hosts, Corey and Greg.
You know, it's daring and vigilant. Gets me every time.
Which one of us is daring and which one of us is vigilant?
I'm sure as hell not vigilant. But I am quite daring.
I'm going to bust some knowledge on you.
Okay.
The name Greg actually stands for vigilant.
Really?
Boom!
Really? The spelling of my name, Corey, with a K,
yeah,
is the Dutch word for helmet.
Helmet. Oh. And the Green Hornet never wore a helmet.
Nope.
That I know of. Neither did Cato. Although, you know, if they put one on that guy that did that movie version, never mind. Hey, welcome to the Green Hornet Case Files. I am Greg.
And I am Corey.
We have some interesting times to talk about today, and I'm excited about the guest we have coming up.
Oh, man. It's, oh, man.
why are you so stoked, man?
Because I'm a comic book dork, and
yeah?
This man is comic pedigree.
Yeah.
You know, his contributions to comics are enormous. And we get into all of it, but it's so for those listening, we kind of mentioned it before, but Ron Fortier is our guest today, and Ron has done not only the now run of Green Hornet, but he did the Terminator. He did the Terminator Burning Earth, which was Alex Ross's first comic.
Wow.
And Ross did some amazing Green Hornet covers for the Kevin Smith runs.
He did.
They're
yeah.
absolutely, like, gallery-worthy paintings. They're beautiful.
I'd love to have one.
Right? Prints of them would be incredible. A post something. But, you know, I mean, like, getting Alex Ross' first gig, like, oh, man.
That's kind of big.
Yeah, yeah. And Ron is, I mean, he's a pulp author. He's a novelist. He wrote D&D books, which is super rad to me. Like, he's just a cool, cool cat, man. I'm excited about this.
I was a little anxious going into this upcoming interview, and I don't know why, but Ron proved to be just a consummate professional and a cool guy.
Yeah, he was super, super rad.
Just super fun. So one of the things that we discussed early on with doing the Green Hornet Case Files is we wanted to cover every aspect of the Green Hornet, from the original show back in 1936 on the radio to the movie serials in the 40s, 40, 41, on up through, and we're going to give you a little teaser here, on up through the 1966 TV show. We got an extra special guest coming up in a future episode that has to direct tie in with that.
And that is stellar, too.
Yeah, yeah, excited about that. And on up through the movie and so forth. And we've had a lot of people reach out to us and say that they would like to, you know, I'd like to hear more about the radio shows. I'd like to hear more about the Now comics, which we're going to cover right now.
Right.
And we've had a number of people that want us just really to do breakdowns on the 66 TV show, and that's all coming.
It's yeah, but bear with us because we're well, I was just explaining to Greg right before we started recording about adult onset ADHD. And we have that. We're looking all over the place at every aspect of it and getting shinied, as my wife calls it. Ooh, shiny. Ooh,
yeah.
Shiny. And so that's where we're at.
Squirrel.
Right, exactly. And so it's we want it all, and we want it right now because we're Americans and that's how we live.
Well, and we discussed early on, too, of how often we were going to do this show, how long the show would be, and we settled on doing it every other week for about 45 minutes.
Yep.
And I'm ready to do it, like, every day.
I know. I can show you my texts.
2 hours at a time, 3 hours at a time. And I know quickly it would go, you know, and maybe it's in the process doing that right now. I don't know. It's in the can, my friends. But we're really excited about some of the guests that we have that keep popping up and keep saying, yes, we'd be happy to do the show with you. And that is also kind of driving the direction from some of the different episodes.
Right. Is who gets back to us and says
exactly.
Yes.
Yeah. And we've reached out to a lot of different people in addition to the people that have reached out to us.
Right.
And we're waiting on, you know, answers back from different people because we want to bring everything Green Hornet to you. And I had a thought here earlier in the week about the Green Hornet and my cosplay that I do with the Green Hornet. Somebody had said something about steampunk to me, and I thought, oh, a Green Hornet steampunk outfit. I went and looked it up, and there's some cool ones already.
Oh, I hadn't even... Yeah.
Yeah. Get that gas gun going, baby.
See, and then, but that plays into my whole thing of it. I want a cyberpunk Green Hornet. Like, I've been talking about this for, like, it just would fit the noir of it. Anyway, sorry.
No. And I keep getting emails from people and comments about the, you know, where it's going to go and the movie. You know, we're in the process of trying to figure out. We haven't heard anything from Amazia Entertainment, you know, Universal. Nobody has said really anything about what's happening.
We should reach out.
I did already.
Of course you did. Yeah. I knew you did.
Haven't heard back from them. That's one of the other people who we're waiting on, you know, getting an answer from. But Hollywood is like that.
Yeah.
The last real news we had was like last year at some point. They said Chris Pine maybe was interested in doing the show.
And we've gone back and forth on that. You don't love that idea, but I do.
I guess we'll wait and see.
Yeah.
We'll wait and see. But you asked me at one point about the cyberpunk aspect, and I pointed you towards one of the comic runs. And
Strikes Again, right?
Yeah, The Strikes Again, which was part of the Now group, which Ron had a hand in, at least part of it.
Which we're about to learn about.
Yeah, we really are. And what really fascinates me about this conversation with Ron is the whole thought process that Ron went through to bring his run to life.
It was such a smart way to approach it and reinvigorate the property at that. I mean, that was 89, 90, I think, is what we said. And, I mean, nothing had been done with it since 1966. So it had been sitting dormant. I mean, like, people had tried, and he talks about that. But his looking at it from a different angle really is what reinvigorated it.
Well, let's take a few minutes here and find out with Ron Fortier.
It's a fascinating character and a fascinating history entirely from, you know, the radio station on through the years. A fascinating thing as I found out.
Well, what I guess my first question is, what brought you to the Green Hornet?
Well, I mean, I had been a fan of the 60s television series with Van Williams and Bruce Lee, which was my first real introduction to the character. I believe through various other magazines like Starlog magazine and then those kind of things that were prevalent in those days, I'd read articles about the character, all right, and had a vague notion that he had been born in the days of radio melodramas. But that's pretty much what I knew. And what happened was I ran into an artist named Steve Irwin, who's since passed away last year, sadly, from Texas. And Steve was on a tour of comic shops with other creators from a little Texas comic company they'd started. And this I'm going to date now. I think this was 1988 sometimes. And they ended up in Sutton, New Hampshire, where I lived. at my local comic store, and I'd gone in to meet them, and Steve and I hit it off almost immediately, and we got to talking about all those great characters. And I think this happens all the time. At any given time, there's always some popular cultural hero that isn't being utilized anymore. So as Steve and I were talking, you know, Steve brought up, he says, remember that Green Hornet show in the 60s? And as it turns out, both of us have been huge fans of a show that, you know, if you know, you're aware, only lasted 26 episodes, but was just so much fun, so well produced, so well written. And so Steve said, wouldn't it be cool to do a Green Hornet comic book? And I like the idea a lot myself. Steve had a portfolio of his artwork. It looks absolutely beautiful. And so before he left, we exchanged contact information. And I came home that night and started giving some thought to putting together a proposal for a new Green Hornet comic book. Any project I ever tackle, I'm one of those guys who likes to do research, to do my homework. And I thought, well, you know, before I write word one, I want to know who the Green Hornet is. And luckily, living in New England, I had easily one of the best sources of information in that regard in writer Will Murray, who lived in nearby Massachusetts. And Will and I were old friends. I knew Will had written several articles on the character for Starlog magazine. So I immediately gave Will a call and said, what do you have on the Green Hornet? And he started to laugh. He said, oh, I did a few articles. God bless him. He went and Xeroxed all of those, mimeographed them, and sent me a huge manila envelope packed. And in it, there was the whole history of how this character was created back in the 30s for WXYZ in Detroit. And what fascinated me the most about the Green Hornet, unlike the other pulp characters I heard or read about, like the Shadow or the Spider, or those kind of guys, was the fact that he actually posed as a bad guy to catch the bad guys. And fascinating concept. The guy had actually three identities. He's a newspaper publisher, crusading publisher. He's a wanted criminal mastermind. And actually, in fact, a, you know, champion of justice. Okay, so now I've got all the articles that I needed. I took that further step. I went out and found VHS copies of those early serials and watched those beginning to end. Until ultimately I felt I knew the character well enough, I knew his background and history, I could start writing a comic book proposal. Basically suggesting to a would-be publisher, whoever at that time owned the copyrights, that this is how I would write a Green Hornet comic book if I were given that opportunity. And almost immediately, doing the research and the homework that was gave me a real appreciation for all the people involved with the evolution of Britt Reed the Green Hornet. And I mean, going back to the radio melodramas, all the way up to the serials, and the TV show. And I began to wonder, rather than just, you know, like say, well, we're just going to give you a Green Hornet for 1989 and that's it. Here he is, you know, out of whole cloth. I thought, wouldn't it be interesting if somehow or another I could say these various interpretations of the character through the ages were actually descendants? What if this was a family? What if the radio hornet was the grand sire? What if, you know, his son or whatever was the second hornet in the serials? And then the third was the one or et cetera in TV shows and stuff like that. That became my quest. That became my goal to see if I could make that work. And trust me, it wasn't easy. I set up a chart in my living room, and my wife will attest that many nights I would spend on that floor with a calendar, with a calculator, trying to figure out dates and times, when these characters would have operated, when, if ever, they would have married, would they have children, how would this have all worked? It drove me absolutely bonkers.
So did Now already have the rights, or did they acquire them after your pitch, or how'd that work?
Oh, no, I brought them the rights.
Oh, I see.
Oh, yeah, I say I brought them. I introduced them to the rights. But let me answer that little conundrum I posted, and I hope you guys will get a real kick out of this. One of the things about writing I've learned over the years is that usually when you have some kind of a plot problem or a conundrum dealing with the plot, generally, if you study the material closer, you'll find there's a solution in it. And one of the things I didn't mention in recounting the Green Hornet's history was the fact that he was actually related to the Lone Ranger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, okay, right. So he was the grandnephew of the Lone Ranger, right? The Lone Ranger was the Texas Ranger John Reed. Mm-hmm. His brother was killed, but his brother died, leaving a widow and a son, Danny Reed.
Dan Reed, well, yeah, senior and junior.
Okay, right. So here I am, decades later, again, on the living room rug. I cannot make the father, the son thing work. And the problem with that is because if you're going to create a masked Avenger who's going to roam around, you know, the big city fighting crime, he has no time for romance, no time to get married, no time to have a family. But what if he had a brother who had a typical civilian job, like a engineer or a lawyer? And what if he got married? And what if he had kids to the point where your original hero is about to retire? And guess who's now 18 or 19?
Yep.
His nephew. And that was the linchpin. It wasn't father to son. I went back to the Lone Ranger. It was uncle to nephew. And suddenly I had my timeline. I ended up writing a 45-page proposal, which for most comic proposals, people will tell you that's the thing you never do. You never give them more than two or three pages. And I wrote 45. All right. So now here we go. I show up at the San Diego Comic Convention in 1989, that summer of 1989. And I've got this proposal in my briefcase. And I'm walking around the convention hall. I had an agent at that time, and he's introducing me to various publishers. And lo and behold, I get introduced to Tony Caputo of Now Comics. They were based out of Chicago. In the course of our initial talk, Tony started talking about the fact that they had just put out that year, earlier that year, a comic book based on the Terminator movie. At that time, only one movie had come out, the one with Arnold Schwarzenegger that everybody's familiar with, and they had acquired the rights to it. But somehow or other, the fans weren't taking to their comic book, and the artist on the book was pulling his hair. Well, it didn't take me long to realize what they had done is gone out and hired a New York Times best-selling science fiction writer, author, whatever you will, who had never written a comic book script in his life. And the majority of what he was giving the artist was talking heads. So here they are asking me, well, any chance you'd like to, you know, take on the Terminator? And obviously it came out of left field. It was nothing that I'd gone there looking for. But, you know, I'm breaking into the business. I'm looking for a paying gig, and here it is. I mean, arguably a very, you know, successful movie's got a lot of exposure. We shake hands. I agree that once I get home, I'll whip out a few plots and start writing the Terminator monthly comic for Now Comics.
So that's Burning Earth?
Well, it eventually became Burning Earth. Right, okay. Exactly. That was, right. So now the con's almost done. And my wife says to me, why don't we walk around and say goodbye to some of the people we met? And we stopped at the Now booth. And there's Tony. And Tony's all happy because, you know, he's got a new writer for the Terminator. And we're talking a little bit. And guess what? Just like Steve Irwin that previous year, Tony launches into this, you know, it's too bad nobody's doing a Tarzan comic, and it's too bad nobody's doing a Flash Gordon comic, and it's too bad nobody's doing a Green Hornet comic.
Bingo.
Oh, Lord. Oh, bingo. The second he said that, I slapped my briefcase on his table. I open it up. I take this giant, like, small telephone book, and I hand it to him. And he goes, what's this? That's a proposal for a new Green Hornet series, if you're interested. Well, his face lights up and he goes, yeah, I'm interested. He says, I'll tell you what, he says, let me find out who owns the copyright and all that good stuff. And I brought my hand up. I said, that's on the last page, Tony.
You got him.
He looks at the last page. At that particular time, the property had been inherited by George Trendle's son, George Trendle Jr.,
right,
who was at that time out of the business, pretty much living in Hawaii. And he had hired Leisure Concept out of New York to manage the property, that and whatever other properties they had. So they were the people to see. And so, you know, that's it. He says, I'm going to see what I can do with this. He says, I'd really like to get my hands on this character. I said, well, you and me both. We shook hands, and I came home to New Hampshire and started writing The Terminator. Well, lo and behold, I think 2 or 3 months had gone by, and one night my wife and I having dinner, the phone rings, I pick it up, and it's Tony, and he goes, you'll never guess where I'm at. And I guess, I don't think I will. He goes, I'm in New York. He says, I have an appointment tomorrow morning with Leisure Concept, all based on your proposal. He said, I sent him a copy, and they wanted to talk to me.
Nice.
Well,
nice.
Keep your fingers crossed. Yeah, keep your fingers crossed. Sure enough, that next day was one of the longest days in my writing career, let me tell you. That evening came, the phone rang again. I picked it up. It was Tony, and he goes, we got it. Now Comic has the Green Hornet, and you're going to write it. My heart was beating like crazy. And he says, hey, before you hang up, he says, I got to tell you, he says, they told me since the show had gone off the air back in the 60s, every bloody comic book company that you can think of had approached them. But all of them had fallen into the trap of trying to do just another Green Hornet. He says, I couldn't stop these people from gushing about the fact that you connected all the different versions and gave them a family legacy saga. They were bowled over. And so Ron, he says, part of the whole deal with doing this was that, yeah, we could do the Green Hornet if you were the guy writing it and writing this series.
Nice.
It is such an awesome story.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. So how many did you wind up writing for them?
I wrote one year's worth. I wrote, I think, 13 copies, a full year monthly comic, before they went belly up. Okay. And it was really a case of bad money management. They went bankrupt. They were playing, you know, footloose and fancy free with the money they were getting in. I never got the 13 check. I ended up getting a lawyer to sue them to get some kind of money back for that. They went out and hired a Canadian writer to pick up the series because I wasn't going to work with them anymore. As you recall, I told you guys I had an agent, and, you know, he wasn't going to put up with that either. So basically, I finished issue 13. That was the last one I wrote of that series. It launched my career. I got to work with, as it turned out, the guy from Texas had gone to San Diego the same year I did and got a job drawing Superman. So he didn't end up coming on the project with me. But while in San Diego, I met a young guy who was the art director, the managing art director of the old, Dungeons and Dragons?
TSR.
Right. And that was Jeff Butler. And when I met Jeff in San Diego, part of his portfolio, he done sketches of a Green Hornet character. He was a huge fan of the 60s show. When the whole thing came about and now got the rights and I was going to write it, I was left in the lurch who was going to draw it. And they pretty much left that up to me, whoever I wanted to work with. And my wife, God bless her, said, well, remember that young kid? I said, yeah, but he's the managing editor at TSR. He's making buku big bucks. And she says, yeah, but I saw the passion in his whole demeanor when you guys were talking about the Green Hornet. I called him. He went through the roof that night when I told him what I was offering him. And sure enough, supposedly the next day, he walked into the offices of Dungeons and Dragons and gave his 2-week notice. And then became my artist for that first year on the Green Hornet, Jeff Butler, and easily one of the greatest artists I've ever had the pleasure of working with.
That's awesome. Didn't you end up writing a couple of books for TSR?
Yes, I did. Right, which was part of a subsidiary or offshoot, a thing they called Windwalker Books.
Mm.
And I did those with a fantasy writer named Ardent Mayer, again, out of Texas. They were so happy with it, they went back to Ardent and asked us to do a second one. And we did a sequel called Monkey Station. God bless her, and thanks to her, for the first time, I was a published writer. As the Beatles said, you know, I want to be a paperback writer. Well, that's what I was.
There you are. So, there you are.
Yeah.
What do you think? Every day I get a new email since we started this this podcast. I get a new email from somebody asking me what I know about the possibility of a new film that might come out. Corey and I have been kind of asking people as we go along as to what direction do you think a modern take on the Green Hornet needs to be?
All right. Well, okay. I've always had a pretty much, you know, ready answer for that, only because it was something that I discovered when I was writing it. Even putting the proposal together, even studying the history of the character, which, you know, I learned and became a pseudo expert on, if you will. The kicker is I'm writing the series and realizing that this guy's a gangster. So I better have crimes for him to commit, or at least look like he's committing. And there better be real crimes that he's going to solve. So the takeaway from that to me was always, you can't do the Green Hornet like you would do a cop melodrama, not so much a cop melodrama as a crime melodrama. You're going to do an adult good, straight up Green Hornet series if you do it about mobsters and gangsters and his crime against them.
So almost the Green Hornet meets the Wire?
There you go. That's it. You got it.
That's an interesting take. I like
that. There you go. Let's spin on that one, baby.
Yeah, I mean, do you remember a Ben Affleck flick a couple of years ago called The Accountant?
Yeah.
Where he was this autistic, like, crime buster who worked with numbers and everything?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the guy who wrote and directed that at one time was that close to getting Universal or whoever to let him do a Green Hornet movie.
Really? Bill Dubuque?
Yeah, and that was his take. And, I mean, I would have danced the jig if he'd have made it happen.
Yeah, that sounds right? Amazing.
And that's what I'm saying. You have to put away the superhero mentality. You have to get Batman out of your head and all this good stuff. If you're going to do the melodrama right, then, like I said, it's got to be down, dirty, and gritty. The people he goes up against are pretty much, you know, sophisticated criminals, mobs, and deadly. And he's in the fight of his life to save his city. There's so much power and melodrama in that. But, you know, don't sugarcoat it, for heaven's sakes. You know, give us a real hero that, you know, people can admire and root for.
So are you ready for a new comic? Are you ready to write a new comic now?
you guys will die. All right. Life is absolutely crazy, okay? And I have to tell you guys that in hindsight, I look back on it from the time I came back from Vietnam and basically settled down and said, hey, I want to make some of my dreams come true. I didn't realize the road I was going on. I didn't realize the ups and downs, the journeys, and some of the things I've done and some of the phenomenal artists that I've had the good fortune to work with. You already mentioned I was in the right place at the right time to write Alex Ross's first ever comics work, which
that Burning Earth,
okay. I mean, what a rush that was, okay, to see that man take my scripts and what he did with them. That was insanity. All right, the rush, it was incredible. So here's the kicker: I've never stopped working since those days. And it was never a full-time job. You have to understand, I was married. I had a family. I had kids to bring up. And so I had a day job. I worked in a factory for some 31 years. And the writing got done at night when the rest of the family was quiet and asleep. And I met my responsibilities of life and what I had to do as a father and a husband. And the wee hours in the mornings when I was initially pecking away at the typewriter, the Smith Corona, until eventually the computer and all this good stuff. But even though there have been ups and downs and slow periods and fast periods, I've always had a project in front of me. So here we go. At the height of doing the Terminator and the Green Hornet, at that time, I was also doing an independent comic for Caliber Press called the Boston Bombers. And I was doing three comic books at a time. Series, that is, ongoing series. Okay. So here I am. I'm retired, or supposed to be retired, my wife says, right? I'm 77 years old. I'm 77 years old, and I am currently involved, ongoing now, with 8 different comic projects.
Ooh,
you're slacking. Just kind of a slacker, aren't you?
You guys have one coming starting in May, is that right, through Airship 27?
No, not through Airship 27. Boy, that's a whole other McGill, all right?
That's another show.
Oh, hey, please. We'll gladly talk about pulps. I love pulps, and that's something. 15 years ago, I went to a pulp convention after having been in comics for almost 55 years. I went to a pulp convention in Dayton, Ohio, because I was curious about this thing called pulps and how it was, you know, the precursor of what we call the comic books today, all right, yeah, the distant cousins from the 30s. And lo and behold, I realized at that show that they had over 100 vendors pretty much doing nothing but selling old magazines that were falling apart or facsimile reprints of those old magazines. And maybe 60 people came to the show. At that time, like I said, I was still in my 50s, going into my 60s. I was the youngest guy there. The realization was I came home from that convention with the thought that if somebody doesn't give this fandom a shot in the arm real quick, it's going to die away on us. Mm-hmm. And we're going to forget all about these amazing magazines and writers and characters. And so I picked up the phone and called my now business partner, artist Rob Davis, who lives in Missouri. And Rob had been a big, successful graphic artist during the heyday of the late 80s in comics, and had worked for Malibu and had worked for DC, and he'd drawn some of their Star Trek comics. And we'd always stayed in touch. And so I told him about this pulp fandom that I'd seen and that I thought something needed to be done, at which point Rob came back to me and said, well, what do you got in mind? And I said, maybe it's time somebody started writing new pulps, adventures based on some of these classic pulp characters from the 1930s and 40s. And Rob, well, how can we do that? I mean, you know, I said, Rob, except for a handful of those characters, which we're talking now, the Shadow, the Spider, or Doc Savage, the majority of them, 95% of them, fell into public domain years ago. And so overnight, Rob and I, 15 years ago, and I'm not reinventing the wheel here, guys, and I'm not patting myself on the back. It was like serendipitous that while Rob and I were wrestling with this concept and idea, so were two or three other publishers across the globe. Joe Gentile was doing it at Moonstone in Chicago. Moonstone Books is starting to do short stories based on Kolchak, the Night Stalker, the old Sunday Phantom, Lee Fox character. And we're talking prose stories. Rob and I created a company called Airship 27, and using on-demand printing, desktop publishing, and tapping into our wide social network of writers and artists in the comic book field, started publishing books under the label Airship 27 Productions. Nice. And now we go to this, you know, several pulp shows. There's two great pulp shows every year. One in Chicago in the spring called the Windy City Paper and Pulp Show, and the other one is in Pittsburgh in the fall. And I would argue that today, 15 years later, there are at least 20 viable publishers publishing what we call new pulp today.
Awesome.
Yeah, I love pulp. I discovered it a few years ago, and I just absolutely love pulp.
Yeah, yeah, we've had this discussion a few times.
Yeah.
Well, I'm gonna give you. I gotta plug Airship 27, guys. Go to Amazon, hit Airship 27. I mean, right now, for two guys who are doing this as a hobby, and again, understand, this is aside from the comic work I'm doing. This is aside from the comic work Rob's doing. It's like, you can't kill us old war horses. What can I say?
Well, we're thankful you're out there doing the good work.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Hey, look, you know, it's like Rob and I laugh and tease each other all the time. Like, you know, how long are we going to keep doing this? And the stock answer is always the same. Bill, it ain't fun anymore.
That's exactly right.
That's why we do this.
That's why we do this. Yeah, until it's not fun anymore and we don't have anything else to say. So. Ron, we can't thank you enough for spending a little bit of time to talk Green Hornet with us. We want to come back at some point, and we'll talk more about the characters in depth and more about specific episodes and or specific issues and so forth. But really appreciate your time here for the Green Hornet Case Files.
Absolute honor,
hey,
my friend.
Hey, thank you both, gentlemen. I love doing this kind of stuff. It's a joy to me. I grew up learning how to read thanks to comic books. And anytime I can do a show like this and hopefully help spread the gospel of comics and pulps, I'm your guy.
Holy mackerel.
That's another show. That's a whole nother show.
Well, what a great conversation, though.
God, it's so cool.
And you at home, and I'm sorry to burst this bubble, but I'm staring down the barrel, breaking the fourth wall. You missed it. We had to trim it because we had an extended conversation that there's some gems in there that you'll probably hear in the future somewhere.
I think that's part of the idea, is we'll save some for future episodes. And of course, Ron's ready to come back anytime.
Which, yeah, but what a so generous and cool, and he's just got a bunch of great stories. And I know this is kind of an offside thing, but I could listen to his accent all day long.
Well, you know, he grew up in a land far, far away.
Right? And, I dig it.
And I love the idea of his thought process of family members and going through the whole Lone Ranger thing, where it's not father to son.
Right. The nephew.
The nephew. Or in some cases, the daughter of Cato, or, you know, the niece, or whatever the case happens to be.
Yeah. It's you know me, it's all.
Where are you going with this?
It was a Big Bang reference. Is Sheldon paraphrases T.S. Eliot and says, "This is how the world ends, not with a bang, but with a nephew." But anyway, it comes back to it. We talked about it in the very first episode. That's one of the things that got me into the Green Hornet was the relation to the Lone Ranger.
Yeah.
And so him keeping that aspect of it as the central hook of the whole process was such a stroke of genius. Like, it's brilliant to do it that way. Like, oh, this is why it was built. Let's just use that over and over.
Well, and if you look then forward at the Kevin Smith version,
right,
to take it, and it was father to son. And then that translated over to the movie as well, from father to son.
Right.
And there's nothing wrong with that version.
No.
But I think if you have the thought process that Ron had, you know, the timeline doesn't always work out. If you're trying to keep it true to when it was created.
Well, and it's like you mentioned, you know, like when would this guy have time?
Exactly.
For a family.
Yeah.
Like, how you can't be the Green Hornet and dad. Like, because you have that, you're adding one more personality to it.
Mm-hmm.
It just becomes all insurmountable. I mean, of course, it's fiction. We can say whatever we want.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is that when you come at it from a realistic standpoint, which is what Ron was doing, like, that thought process of it and keeping it down the line in a near relative as opposed to the direct. And again, like we're saying, that's obviously inspired by the Lone Ranger. But he even kind of came to that afterwards. So coming at it from that aspect, coming at it from the family angle, but tangential family angle, is going to yield so much different possibilities. Because at the same time, it's I have massive unnecessary connection fatigue ever since Luke found out that Darth Vader was his father. Spoiler alert.
Oh. Really?
Everybody was, oh, it's my dad, or my long... I mean, even Goldeneye, that was 007's brother. Like, what? Come on. Like, it's just... It feels forced and contrived to have those connections. A lot of times, Ron's run didn't feel that way.
No.
It felt organic. It felt like, yeah, of course, that makes so much sense. And that's really what he brought to it. Was incredible though, because of that.
I'm sitting here thinking about the movie version, and I shouldn't not say Seth Rogen's name, but sometimes it's hard to get that out of my mouth. Sorry. When I think about the Seth Rogen version, and I think about the fact that it was father to son, and maybe you can correct me on this. Maybe you listeners will be emailing us podcast@greenhornet66.com. There wasn't that story thrown in there about Cato. Cato was just the guy who made coffee and worked on the cars, but it was not a father to son thing for him.
Right. So the initial Green Hornet in that universe didn't have a Kato.
No.
So
if you're assuming that Britt Reed Sr. was the Green, I can't remember that part of the movie, whether that they made that connection or whether...
I don't know. It's been a minute since I watched it. I feel really bad. We should probably have remedied that. Or not.
If you're going to suggest that we sit and watch the film again, I'm up for it.
Are you really?
Actually, I am. I'm ready to go.
I almost feel like if we recorded if we had a Patreon, that would be a Patreon episode, is MST3K version of that movie.
Well, maybe it's time we had a Patreon. I don't know. And let's throw it out to you guys. What do you think? Is it time that this is only episode, what, 5?
Yeah. No, I'm not saying we should. It would be fun content.
I think so. I had a bit of a brain fart that I failed on the last episode when we were having a conversation with Jason about becoming Green Hornet. And I failed to ask him a very important question. So I texted him this last week.
Okay.
And said, okay, what form of martial art would you recommend that a Britt Reed wannabe would take on?
That is an interesting question.
What form of martial art would make you the most effective in this crime-fighting role?
So, and I'm assuming you have an answer from
him.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. But you're asking my opinion?
Sure.
Well, it would probably be some sort of Brazilian jiu-jitsu. The grappling is one of the most effective fighting techniques there is. But Bruce's philosophy of Jeet Kune Do, of mixing, is probably the ultimate answer.
And that's exactly what Jason came back with.
And
I knew it was going to be the answer. I knew that was going to be his answer, the Jeet Kune Do, the version that eventually became the modern MMA. Would be the answer, because situations would be so fluid and in flux that you would need to be able to make adjustments. And that's what Jeet Kune Do is all about.
Right, right.
Yeah.
With a heavy, heavy basis in Wing Chun.
Yeah.
And which on its own is pretty badass.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't mess with anybody in Wing Chun, like, period. But it was Bruce's amalgamation, Jeet Kune Do, that was taking that as the bouillabaisse and adding to it as he went.
So I was feeling a little remiss about not addressing that.
No, that's a good question. I was kind of bummed we didn't think of it last time.
Didn't think about it, and didn't go that direction. So now we've talked about now and the comics, and we've talked about becoming
Green Hornet, Britt Reed.
I'm not exactly sure what direction we're going to go with the next, but I've got some ideas, and I know you do too.
Oh, I got a bunch.
Yeah.
I got a bunch.
So big thanks to Ron for spending some time with us and talking about the comics run and a really wonderfully rich storyline.
Absolutely. And he was so giving in that interview. I really can't thank him enough. It was so cool. But it also really kicked it up that I want to find them. I need to find copies, physical copies, of those comics. I want them. I want to read them in my hand.
You are a Stan Lee fan all the way along.
You know what I'm saying.
And I know the quote. It has to do with, they look great on the page, but you just want to hold them in your hand.
That's right.
Okay. And if you don't know what that reference is, send us an email.
Google it. But podcast@greenhornet66.com.
I'm happy to answer that question all day long.
It's just one word. That's all you're getting back.
Yeah, that's all you're getting. Hey, big thanks again to everybody who has been commenting and downloading the show. And I've made the move away from a couple of SoundCloud. I've made the move away from SoundCloud and Stitcher, because Stitcher's going away. If you're really upset about the SoundCloud thing, let me know. We're really pushing the Spotify, the YouTube, and the Apple podcast. And I know a lot of you are also picking up the podcast on some of the amalgamations, the aggregators, and so forth that will grab the RSS feed. So we do appreciate that.
So I had gotten a message, and that's what I was actually just looking for, it because I wanted to bring it up because I want to put the seed in your mind for a future conversation.
All right.
And this was on the conversation we were having with Jason.
Okay.
And a listener sent me, might you guys touch on how a wealthy main character would have a line that they don't cross? Your Hornet versus your anti-hero like the Punisher. So think on that. That's what I want to do in the future.
I like that idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, where's the line?
So, and that's from Jables, our intrepid listener.
All right. And again, thank you for spending a lot of time of writing back to us. We really do appreciate that. And with that,
I think we're going to roll out of here.
I think it's about time to roll, my friend.
I hear some buzzing.
I do too. Until next time, everybody, stay safe and let's roll.
As the night envelops the city once more, our journey through the hidden alleys of history and valor comes to a close. You've been riding shotgun with the Green Hornet Case Files, where the echoes of the past meet the voices of the present. Tune in again for the next thrilling adventure, where shadows speak, secrets unfold, and the legacy of the Green Hornet continues to inspire. The Green Hornet Case Files is a Grail Productions podcast. The Green Hornet is owned exclusively by Green Hornet, Inc. Until next time, vigilant listeners, keep your wits sharp and your spirit unbreakable.